I know we need to educate and get the word out to people, but I don't like marketing. And when we transitioned long-term care of any sorts from the not-for-profits, and again, it needed to happen because the not-for-profits only were taking care of rich people for the most part. So the not-for-profits, the church homes and all, were taking that. And they, the terminology the industry started using as it became more commercialized was marketing terms, development, marketing, sales, and all. And I just think that that's not what we're about. And we should be helping the seniors that come to us find the right solution for them.
Welcome to the Disruptive Podcast. My name is Jamie, and we're here with Scott Middleton. He's in the mountains. He's up high right now. How are you doing, Scott?
I'm doing great, Jamie.
Yeah.
I was working in the upstate and decided my wife's out of town, and I said, I'm just going to head up to the mountains and find some cool weather because it's too hot. Then my children decided they're going to follow me up this weekend so we can actually play golf without dying in the heat.
That's nice. Great. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, it'll be beautiful up there. I'm sure the ball probably flies a little bit further being at the elevation.
You know, I hope so.
Yeah.
I hadn't really thought about that.
It's supposed to. I don't know what, you know, I know in Denver they say the ball goes significantly further.
Well, now my next golf trip is going to be to Denver then.
There you go. If you want to increase your distance, just go to Denver. So
that is great.
Well, Scott, today we're going to talk about something I know you're really passionate about and something that you're kind of re-rolling out, and that's the Senior Solutions Advisor position. That is something I did a long time ago when we were with hospice, which was more of marketing. I think it's going to be a little bit different, but give us that 40,000 foot view. Where did you come up with this idea to re-roll out this position?
Well, and what I want to share with folks is that about 20, well, let's see, we sold the buildings in 2010. We've been doing it for at least 5 or 6 years, maybe before that. So it's been at least 15 plus years since we rolled out this terminology. What was interesting, I was in Atlanta working down there, and I saw somebody was telling me that there's this company and it's called Senior Solutions, and realized that exactly what we used to do. Mm-hmm. So the Senior Solutions person down in Atlanta, or that company, what they do is they help people look for, really, they're looking for placement only. Mm-hmm. And so if you call them, they're going to go, oh, well, you know, we're just going to try to find you an assisted living or nursing home. And they'll say, oh, it's free. They advertise, oh, it's all free, like a place for mom. You go on a website and you can put your name in there and somebody will contact you. But right. Place for Mom is nothing but a website. And what they do is that if you get placed in a building, they go in and the building has to pay them the first month's rent as compensation. And so, again, people think, oh, this is free. No, when you think about it, in a 100-bed facility, there's probably 30 to 40% turnover every year.
Sure.
Which means 30 or 40 people are dropping, say, an average of $5,000 or $200,000 the company pays these Senior Solutions Advisors. And what that does is it takes away from the money that's available to care for your parents. Because that's an expense.
Right.
And
absolutely.
So they can't afford the same staffing levels and all that because they had to pay for that.
Right.
And so, you know, it's while that's a great solution because people were looking for a way to pay for things, ultimately it raises the cost of the assisted living and the care that's out there. And I will tell people, I know you think it's a lot of money when you go out there and pay for your loved one to move in a building, but the margins are slim.
Yeah.
Very slim, especially in today's time when interest rates are 7.5-8%.
Right. Sure.
It's, you know, they're not making money. In fact, a lot of the buildings are being bought up by investment groups and that are hedging the real estate market. So they're not in the business of taking care of old people. All they're doing is saying, hey, the interest rates are high right now, prices are a bit low, and so I'm going to go buy these and hoping that in 10 years we'll get our return on our money. So they buy the buildings with their cash. And so the buildings are operating on a margin where they don't even have to make a payment because the investors are there. But somewhere down the road, somebody has to pay the piper, and and it's happening with them. So I ran across that terminology again recently. I think it came out of the Atlanta office when I heard that. And I was going, oh, my gosh, we were the first senior solutions advisors in the country back 15 years ago. And what happened was I was so frustrated. Healthcare, I know we need to educate and get the word out to people, but I don't like marketing. Right. And when we transitioned long-term care of any sorts from the not-for-profits and again, it needed to happen because the not-for-profits only were taking care of rich people for the most part.
Sure.
So the not-for-profits, the church homes and all, were taking that. And they, the terminology the industry started using as it became more commercialized was marketing terms, development, marketing, sales, and all. And I just think that that's not what we're about. And we should be helping the seniors that come to us find the right solution for them, even if it's not the product that we're selling.
Right.
And I personally believe in my business that when you do right by the customer, the patient or the resident, you will be rewarded for that.
Sure. Absolutely.
But I remember back in the day, I was hiring a pharmacist 10 or 15 years ago. And when I was doing the interview for the pharmacist, I was telling her, I said, now, our pharmacy is very different. I want you to discontinue any additional meds that person needs to have.
Right.
And she said, what? And I said, yes, I want you, if you see a med coming through and you think, gosh, I don't know why this person's taking this, or it's not a good medicine to take for this. I said, I want you to pick up the phone and call the provider and explain to them why and discontinue it. And she said, oh, what a blessing. She said, I was threatened. My job got threatened by one of the big chains, a pharmacy chains, because I did that. I picked up the phone and called a doctor and said, hey, I just wanted you to know, there's another medication that's better. It's also cheaper. The doctor ended up calling she said, I was telling my boss about it, and I got reprimanded because I am always supposed to sell. He said, we are in the retail market to sell stuff, and your job is to sell what the doctor ordered no matter what. Bad health care.
It is.
Yeah, it really that company's is. They're still operating.
Wow.
And I'm telling you, that's why I don't support the big box pharmacies. And most of them now are owned by the payers, you know, out there too.
Right.
So it's really a struggle. So I was sitting there looking at how do we present ourselves and help people understand we're here about the seniors and we want to provide solutions for them. And so we had senior solutions advisors. So we took anybody that was in marketing or sales, that would be the people in the buildings, but also the people that were going out, you know, in outside marketing. Like I met a gal yesterday at a facility and she said, oh yeah, I'm outside marketing. So she's going out to hospitals and nursing homes, home health groups, trying to market their building. And so I wanted to change that up. So our senior solutions advisors are the role for the public to see.
Sure.
And our groups is that you call us and they're the senior solutions advisor is there to talk to the patient, to the family, the residents, and say, okay, how is it that we can help you get the best care for your mom and dad?
Right.
Period. That's all it is. Now, in light of that, it is a marketing position because by doing that, we're educating the community. So what do those senior solutions advisors do? They go to the same places that these other marketing people do.
Right.
They walk into assisted living buildings.
Sure.
So I walk into an assisted living building, say I'm senior solutions advisor from Your Health. And they go, oh, okay, what does that mean? Right now, we have what we call directors of development that do that. Mm-hmm. Same position.
Sure.
But the directors of development go out there and say, hey, you got any patients for me today? And instead, I want to say we're here to make solutions. So if you have residents, and the first thing you do for an assisted living example is you say, I need to know all of your rates, your availability, the kind of level of cares you perform, because I'm going to put that in my book and I'm going to use that to share with my patients.
Right.
So the senior solutions advisors are going to be, there'll be one in our company for every care group. So for every approximately 800 patients that we take care of in that care group. When they walk into a facility, their question is going to be, hey, I need to get information about your facility. I need to look at your staffing ratios. I need to look at your rates, your availability. Do you have dementia care, levels of services that you can provide? And I'm going to put that in my book. And when I have patients or residents that are looking or needing placement, I'm going to call them and say, okay, let's first talk, what's the issue? For most of people, it's money. You know, they have limited resources for their parents. So why would I go look at a building that costs $8,000 if all I have is $4,000 a month? So this way, senior solutions advisors can help them figure that out. The good thing is, if it's being done for our patients, there's no cost to it because Medicare will reimburse us for that and helping, because Medicare will reimburse us for services that we provide that help the physician be able to diagnose and care for a patient better. That's what chronic care management was intended for,
right?
To assist the provider. So if a provider has a patient that's not successful living at home alone, helping to find placement is a good use and resource for those dollars.
Sure.
So our senior solutions advisors will meet the family and the resident and then start looking for what options are out there. So where do they pick up their customers? They also, the traditional marketing places, churches, community health centers, senior centers, funeral homes.
Right.
You know how many people don't know that mom is demented until dad dies?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It happens every single day. So the traditional places. So as I started rolling this out for people that weren't with us in 2012 and 15 when we had these positions, they were like, well, then what's the director of development going to do? And I said, well, they're going to be a senior solutions advisor.
Right.
What? Yeah. I mean, it's really what they do. But right now, when we call somebody a director of development, they don't think about, oh, I should be working with the families. They just think about how many accounts can I hit, how much marketing I could do.
Right.
This position is going to revolutionize us. Because again, we may get a call from our transitional care professional and say, hey, I've got a lady in the hospital and I think she needs more than me just setting up a visit with a doctor.
Right.
Can you meet with them? I really intend these guys to meet with every new patient.
Mm.
And last month we had 2,000 new patients.
Wow.
So that means that if we have 32 senior solutions advisors, one for every care group, then that means they have, 60 patients that they would need to contact and say, hey, let me tell you about other things I can do.
Right.
One of my big missions, Jamie, is if we could just get families who can afford it, and I know it's expensive, to use some caregivers in their home.
Right.
It would change their life, but it would also just change the resident's life.
Sure.
So we've gone out there and negotiated a rate for across our entire company with a company. We're looking for others, home care companies, to be able to provide home care services in people's homes anywhere in our service area. And right now, it's mostly South Carolina and Georgia. It'll cost the patient $32 an hour.
Right.
And you think, wow, that's expensive. No, really, it's $36 to $46 an hour.
Right.
For you to have somebody come in your house. And if it's 24 hours, you might get a little discount or something, but we'd negotiate that. So one of the things our senior solutions advisors will do, they'll have a home care coordinator in all the regions too, in every region. And so those guys will help in negotiating, looking at these different caregiving services and how much they would charge.
Right.
Also, we will have, instead of a director of development, we will have a director of senior solutions advisors. So they'll be helping to direct these folks, getting that information and making sure they're there. But here's what I say. If all of our current homebound patients even had 8 hours of home care a week. Mm-hmm. I mean, four hours, 2 days a week, where somebody would come in for 4 hours. They could bathe patients. They could, you know, put lotions on them. Right. They could cut their toenails. Well, sometimes they can cut their fingernails and toenails. They can just give them a little bit of attention, even right. in our facilities. These facilities are really good, but they're not one-on-one care. So just right. give mom or dad some little individual attention. At $32 an hour for 8 hours a week,
$256 a day.
Right. 256, yeah. And then multiply that by 4 weeks. So you're going to spend $1,000, and you know you have somebody else that will grow to love and care for your mom or dad. Mm-hmm. Now, those of you who can afford more, I would encourage you to do that. But here's what it does for us. I know, and so there's the selfish part of it. I know that if there's a caregiver there, they will in all likelihood be the person to walk in, raise their hand and say, you know, mama doesn't look good today. You might not have noticed it because you see mama every day. I think we need to call the nurse practitioner. Let's right. call the visiting nurse or the community health worker and say, hey, can you make this a priority to come by and see my mom? That will change the industry. And here's what it will do. It will prevent hospitalizations, which is what our job is with Medicare, is to keep people out of the hospital.
Right.
So it's just ties everything together. So I have a book title that I want you to help me with one day, Jamie. Is,
sure.
And so I manage by gossiping around, you know, meaning that may sound bad, but I think it's a good book title, isn't it? Managing yeah. by gossiping around. I am so transparent in what we do. I mean, I don't hold anything back.
Right.
And I tell people all the time, here it is. So the other day I started rolling out just casually what we do, senior solutions advisors. I'm telling you, I was on a call and there was a bunch of these directors of development on there. And I actually, the directors of facility operations could also roll into these roles too, because that's what they do, is go in buildings, everything is okay. And if we're in the building already, they should be helping to figure out what the issues are. But anyway, these guys were like, oh my God, I'm gonna lose my job. It's just, you may have a new job title mm-hmm. and some additional responsibilities, but in essence, all of us at Your Health are here to assist patients, residents, to get the care and services they want.
Right.
So I managed by just talking about this. I unfortunately scared some people. So I hope everybody will listen to this podcast and say, oh, I'm not worried. In fact, I called one of our directors of facility operations Monday or Tuesday, and I said, hey, I want to come ride along with you. And when I got in the car with her yesterday, she was like, is my job safe?
Oh my goodness. But Scott, I think what you know, and I know you know this, but that is rare in an organization where the owner of the organization genuinely wants to come and help and genuinely wants to come and learn what are you doing, you know, or how can I help you? You know, I think that's really rare, because I think people are so gun shy from other organizations. If the, you know, the owner or the CEO calls and says, hey, can I do a ride along? They immediately go to the worst case scenario. So I think it's rare to have what everybody has at Your Health.
Well, and what was wonderful, it was Brittany Graves up in the mm-hmm. Piedmont area. And I called Brittany and she met me in Spartanburg. I was concerned because, the Spartanburg area, we moved it from one region to the next. I was really a little concerned about all what was going on there as the transition. But anyway, I said, just set me up whatever you want me to do. And perfect opportunity. She had a facility that was frustrated with us mm-hmm. and was ready to cut our services. So she walked me in, and when we got there, I didn't know any of this was happening, but when we got there, she said, let me give you a little background. She was so smart too, guys. Her meeting with the administrator and the staff was at whatever it was, on the half hour, 10:30 or something. So she said, yeah, our meeting's at 10. So I get there at 10 o'clock because she knows I always might be a little late anyway. Right. So I got there, but I got there on time that day. And so then she had a little bit of time. She said, let me update you as to what's going on. And really what happened is that we had a provider who copped an attitude in this building. Mm-hmm. And I don't know both sides of the story, but at the end of the day, the provider refused to see a patient for 2 or 3 days.
Right.
And I don't know if she forgot, if she just didn't put it on a radar, but it sounded like in the beginning, she just, I'm not going to do it. And so that's unacceptable.
Right.
You know, and in fact, the administrator told me that as a result of that, the patient was so off the chain, having issues that didn't get resolved, that she had to hire a sitter service, and it cost her, and she paid for it out of her pocket, $1,500.
Mm, wow.
And so she was out money, which she was angry in the beginning. And then the administrator's crying at the end because she's like, I just wanted what was right for my patient. And so what was frustrating is we didn't know about it. And a little bit of it was both faults. The administrator knew who to call, but the staff didn't. And the administrator was out sick, so they weren't bothering her with it. Right. And so it kind of blew up before too late. And there was a little blame to everybody. But basically what I was able to do is to walk through with them and say, well, this is what the model is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. You know, first of all, we have a nurse in the building every day, 5 days a week, but she was unable to get her provider to do the job. What she should have known is there are other providers who could have helped her.
Sure.
There was doctors, there was other nurse practitioners. And so she didn't reach out because she didn't really know. It wasn't necessarily her fault. But now it's given a bad impression of her, too, within the facilities. And we'll have to probably move her to another location just because the facility administration sees her as part of the problem.
Right.
And it really wasn't. So we'll take care of her. But the provider was inappropriate, and she was disciplined, reprimanded, and probably she was terminated. I don't get involved in that aspect of it. But that was just wasn't right. So again, senior solutions advisors are those people who hear those problems. Mm-hmm. I'm here to take care of not just the patients. Well, it is taking care of the patients, but hearing the frustrations of the facility and then making sure that something's done with it.
Yeah.
You know, and when Brittany found out what was going on, she immediately said, let's fix this. And she started working to make that happen with the operations team. And then, of course, repairing damage on the backside of it. But it was just beautiful because I was able to walk in, known this administrator for over 20 something years. And I said, well, I'm sorry you didn't have my number because I would have had you call me directly. But we were able to walk her through. I shared with her, here's what our vision is. And the interesting thing is in the beginning, she was like, there's no saving this. But what I realized, there were only two other provider groups that were going to go in, and neither one of them were going to give her any staffing.
Right.
And I said, well, just for you to know, you know, the other ones, they don't put a medical assistant in those buildings. They don't give you a nurse. I said, you're not going to have anything but the provider.
Right.
Coming in. And so I think that was a fortunate thing. Again, senior solutions advisors, what is your model when you come into assisted living?
Yeah.
Helping them to understand that. So one of the ways, like I said, I want all these caregivers, you know, if we had caregivers in every home, it would change the world. So they're going to be, I always say, look at where the incentives are for these people. So in our incentives for senior solutions advisors, they'll be bonused based on how many hours of sitter service that get sold basically to our people, because to our patients, because I think that's important. It will make a big difference in the cost of Medicare and a big difference in the quality of care. So they will get a percentage. So if they can get, they got 800 patients. If they were just able, I think I figured out 1,600 hours a month, if they could get 200 people to pick up 20 hours a week, or they can get 400 people just to pick up 10 hours a week,
right,
then they would receive a substantial bonus for that. And we get cost savings in it, and the sitter service is making money as well, but it's right. just good quality. qualities. So that's a driving force for them. But they will also get based on admissions, and then also based on, I expect them to talk about all of our services, getting on therapy regularly. You know, we know that 25% of our patients who need to be on therapy at any given time statistically will produce a lower cost of care. So they'll get incentivized on all of our patients. So they may be calling existing patients or talking to new ones and saying, don't forget, you need to be on therapy on a regular basis. You've had a fall. You know, there's some things going on. You got sick. Now you could fall again. So we would therapy, hospice, you know, takes a long time to talk to people about hospice services. Sure. So they'll get an incentive by that. And there were a couple of others, you know, incentives based on how much time and effort they put in to take care of patients. But I think in our company, if you really want to know what your mission is for your position, go look at your bonus structure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And ultimately, it will tell you this is what's important. Right. You know, and those bonuses were established based on what we know Medicare is trying to drive our providers to do
right
out there. So Senior Solutions Advisors, it was brilliant when we had it before. Everybody tried to mimic it when we did it. And then when we got out of the business of hospice and assisted living, we just kind of dropped that.
Right.
And so now we're reviving that role again, and we're transitioning a lot of our current employees there, but also adding more people to make sure that we're doing that.
Yeah. So, and as a person who's done it before from the hospice perspective, it is a very rewarding role. I remember sitting in people's living room, Scott, and saying, oh, you know, what, tell me about what's going on, you know, and hearing kind of their problems, kind of what they're facing, what they've been going through, and to be able to say, oh, I've got something for you. We can do this. We can help you here. We can make this happen. We can get a CNA out here a couple of days a week. You know, there was just so many different ways that we could help people. And your health has way more tools than just the average hospice. You know, so it's going to be such a rewarding job for somebody who wants to really go in and help families and help seniors and really get them the resources and everything that they need to live a happy life, to be able to, you know, have some longevity and some, you know, some really amazing care.
Well, and you mentioned hospice. So one of the things that as maybe this is an announcement for some, but we have licensed a new hospice and we're waiting on Medicare to certify so we can start billing for those services. But a few things have changed in the last 5 years with hospice, and one includes the rate. Like back in our day, I was lucky. We probably made about $5,000 a month was the care that was paid for hospice care.
Right.
And you have to pay a lot of stuff, you know, meds and equipment and all that stuff out of that rate. But today they've actually increase the rate so that the first, I think it's 60 days, you get a higher rate, and it's somewhere around $6,600. Mm. So the hospice rate has gone up. What is that, about 40%? Times 5 would be 20. So yeah, somewhere between 30% and 40% in the last 5 years, while of course the rates for primary care physicians have dropped by 20.
Right.
but yet Medicare says primary care physicians are the most important thing, so they don't really put their money where their mouth is.
Exactly.
But my point is that then that means you should be providing more care to those patients who are on those first 60 days and really watching them. But then later they may settle into a routine and you can reduce that amount until they're closer to dying.
Right.
But what I saw is that none of the hospices have increased their level of care. So in fact, when we were running hospice, our average number of CNA care, like nursing assistant care for a patient, was averaging over 6 hours a week. That was an average.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, if they're going to pay you, they went from $160 in the last 5 years to $225 for that first 60 days, then we should be giving people 10 hours of care a week. And so why are we not doing it? But yet, when I go look at these hospices out there, and I looked at one in particular, I found an incident where they're giving less than two hours per patient per week
Wow.
of care.
Yeah.
And I'm going, more. and getting paid more.
Wow.
You know, for that. So what happened is, and I'm a culprit too. I sold out to an investment group. I really liked the investment group I sold to, and they've sold me on a goods that we're here for the good of the patient. And they really were. It was all people that had worked in the industry, but 2 years later, they sold it to somebody else. 2 years later, they sold it to somebody else. And now it's just at a, it's just an investment box for a bunch of group people in New York.
Yeah.
And they don't, at the end of the day, they're looking at the bottom line, how much money this can bring me, not am I doing a good thing or not. So, you know, that was really our driving force behind getting back into the hospice business. And it is business. You know, I have to say it should be a mission and ministry, but it also is a business, and to get back into that so we can do what was right by our patients. And I'm very excited about that opportunity. But again, here's the thing. I go into a patient's family and say, okay, based on the acuity of your loved one, you know, Medicare would allow me to pay for 10 hours of care in your home. Now, under the primary care, I can still also give you the same services for nurses and other things that I have out there. But let's just say I'm sitting here and go, great, 10 hours is great. I want to dictate it. Well, that's not the way most hospices work. They go, okay, we're going to send a CNA out 3 times a week for 2 hours. And I'm going to go, wait a minute, my dad, if I were a family member, I'm here all the time with him. Here's what I need. I need more than 2 hours at a time because I need to run to the grocery store. I've got my own doctor's appointments. I've got, you know, if I could swing away and go play golf one afternoon, that'd be nice too, you know, for my own mental health. So how can I do that? Well, we may say, I want all 10 hours on Friday. That way I get the whole day off. But what if I go back and say, hey guys, I love this caregiver. She's great. Is there any way I can get her in for another 10 hours and I'll pay you for it? Well, now we can do that. With hospice, no, they're not letting their caregivers go back to those patients' families and do more. So we're contracting with these sitter groups out there, home care services to say, hey, go ahead and I'll pay for 10 hours under hospice. They can pay 10 hours under theirs. We'll actually do a billing ourselves. And so patients will pay us and we'll pay the entity. But again, if I'm a family member and I don't like the caregiver, you know, all I got to do is call up and say, hey, I really don't like this caregiver. Can you find somebody else that's more compatible with my mom and dad? Right. In the past, hospice couldn't change that out because hospice says, nope, that's the one that works in that region or that area, and I can't have somebody else drive across the county lines to come help you. Now I'm just going to call the sitter service and say, hey, we don't want that one anymore. Give us somebody new.
Yeah.
Their problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, I think it's going to be a beautiful system. We are, like I always say, people think we change a lot in our company. We evolve.
Right.
We're evolving. And this evolution has hit a new level for me in that we can now, as physicians group, coordinate all of these services with patients, whether it's physical occupation therapy, respiratory therapy, speech therapy, visiting nurses, community health workers, hospice services, you know, on call. We just rolled out a new triage model for our patients because you know how when you call a doctor's office, and we used to do this same thing ourselves. First thing it says, if this is emergency, call 911.
Right.
You know what's an emergency for a patient? I mean, it's unreal.
Yeah.
Emergency is my blood pressure medicine is going to expire next Thursday. And right. So I need a new prescription. Do I call 911?
Yeah.
Because I can't get a hold of the provider.
But that's what people do.
Some of them will.
Yeah. People go to the emergency room for way less than that.
The reason the doctors did that is they were afraid of being sued.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid of being sued, guys. I think the normal person knows that if I'm cut or bleeding, I'm having a heart attack, I'm calling 911. Sure. I don't have to tell patients that. But what I tell people now is that if you need our services, there's a button when you call our 800 number. I don't even know what it is now, but call the 800 number and it will say, if this is a medical emergency, press some number like one or two. You do that, it goes directly to a triage nurse. Hey, how can I help you? And her job is to say, Yeah. Now, I will say we had a triage nurse a while back said, oh, let me get a nurse practitioner. So they tracked down a nurse practitioner. It's for a facility, 2 o'clock in the morning. Nurse practitioner's response was, hey, I think she's okay, but she's on home health. So would you just call the home health nurse in the morning? Because it wasn't that big of an emergency. And everybody was going, well, that's all she did. And I said, well, what else do you expect her to do? You expect her to write a prescription and send it to a pharmacy at 2 o'clock in the morning and have the family go pick something up when she hasn't ever seen the patient? It's probably not a good thing. You know, it's the better emergency was, let's wait until the morning and figure this out. But she was there to help calm the patient down. Mm-hmm. Hey, this is going to be all right. And that's really what those nurses are going to do to make that quick decision of, yes, this is, call 911, or no, we think we can triage this in the morning.
Right.
Yeah. So everybody has that different even us. So our team was saying, oh, no, what, she should have jumped in the car and driven the 300 miles over to see this patient. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not practical, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Scott, what you're doing is you're really empowering employees to go out of their way to help families and to help seniors. Right. And you're really going out of your way to make it possible. So they have an entire toolkit of ways that they can be creative. They can be, you know, just really innovative in the way that they can provide these services, which is the Senior Solutions Advisor could really, like you said earlier, revolutionize kind of what you guys are already doing.
And the titles are so important. Remember, guys, titles are important because what those titles say in the community and to the people you're working with. And unfortunately, in this world, we've got caught up with titles are important for the employee. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to have a title. Like whenever somebody says to me, I want to be chief, I want to be vice president, I want to be director. When you say I want a title, pack your bags and go somewhere else. I don't want you in my organization.
Right. Yeah.
I want your title to reflect what you do. And I think what happens, even with director of development, what that said to me is that every person we hired, they're concerned is they are a marketer, mm-hmm. not a solutions person for the patient. Right. And I think it removed them from feeling like they had the responsibility. I dare to say, not all of them, but a lot of our directors of development, if we had said, hey, we have Miss Susie out here that needs placement, we're not sure what to do, will you help her? They would have looked at you and said, that's not my job.
Mm. Yeah.
Because they wouldn't have understood that in their title, but yet it really is their. Well, then whose job is that?
Right.
It's certainly not the nurse practitioner's job. It's not the medical assistant's job. And so whose position is that? So this way, it gets you also to make people understand this is important. We even had this argument. So we were talking about, okay, well, we got all these SSAs. So in a region, you'll probably have three to four senior solutions advisors because you have one per care group. Mm-hmm. And so by the time you get three or four, you need to have somebody who's in charge of them because they have to help them understand. And you have to have somebody to fill in when people are out on vacation or you have a position down. So who's going to do the job? So we said, well, somebody made a comment, well, I guess they would be the lead SSA. And somebody else immediately said, nope, you got to call them director, because if you don't, all of them are going to get their feelings hurt that they're not a director anymore. And a little bit of that I get. A little bit of that I understand, right. you know, because everybody wants to know where they are in the pecking order, you know, things. So we made them the director of senior solutions. And so we'll see our DFOs and we'll see our many of our directors of development roll into those roles. I think we'll have some people that were directors of development who were, say, I just want to be a senior solutions advisor because that's what I really want to do. And I hope we do. I hope all of them would say, look, I don't need to direct. I don't need to manage other people. I just want to go out there. And it would be my choice. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, if I was coming into this company and the compensation may be even a bit better for some of the senior solutions advisors, because right. if you're really good and know your job, you'll make more money than your boss.
Mm. Yeah.
Listen, I worked for Bell Department Stores when I was in seminary, and I made more than the assistant manager because I could sell.
Right.
You know, and because sure. I knew what I was selling to. And that's the real key. It was never hard for me to sell a product that I was in love with.
Right.
And I did. I loved clothes. I'm telling you, I'm still a little clothes whore. Y'all know that. If I'm disappointed when somebody doesn't say, God, that's a great looking outfit, Scott. That's a little bit of ego because I was raised in that industry. You right. know, I sold the first leisure suit, I think, in South Carolina. Wow. And it was hard. I will tell you, that was the hardest thing I ever did because I thought leisure suits were ugly. And I steered everybody away from, I don't know if y'all remember those. If you haven't, Google what a leisure suit is. And you had a silk top that went with it. And I looked at that and I said, I can't believe any man wants to wear that. But I did sell it. But I told the people, I don't think this is a fad. It's not going to last long.
Right.
So I could sell a suit and a tie, and I could sell bell-bottom jeans because I liked them at the time. You know, I could do that, but here it is about, but what I love about this, we're selling something that's helping people. Mm-hmm. I remember Melba Allard. If y'all don't know yep. Melba, she is the dearest, sweetest person. She, when I interviewed her, she was working for Copeland's dress store. Mm-hmm. She was the buyer for this dress shop, and she was probably in her early 50s maybe at the time,
right.
or yeah, I guess probably early 50s. And she had knew somebody who knew in our company, and she said, I want to come work for you. I don't care what I do. And so she applied for an activities job, and she did a really good job of it. And then later when we had a marketing position, or it was really the SSA position, she said, I want that position. And I said, Melba, I said, why do you think you're an activities person? Why do you think you could do this job? And she said, this was in 2001. And right. she looked at me and she said, I could sell a dress to a doctor's wife that costs $3,000 and she's going to wear it one time.
Hmm.
And she said, if I can do that, I know that I could sell our products, assisted living, nursing home, and all that to someone because they need it.
Yep.
It's really a need.
Yeah. That's it. And that's really what you're solving somebody's problem at the end of the day. And when you can solve somebody's problem, they're going to buy it all day long.
Exactly. Yeah. yeah. And what are the solutions? You know, when I was going out to look for my dad for his placement, you know, Becky Cunningham played the role of a senior solutions advisor mm-hmm. for me. And I thank her so much for it. She lined me up 5 facilities to go look at. I only went to one.
Yeah. Right.
Because she took me to the one she thought was best suited for me first.
Mm-hmm.
And we walked into the building and I met 10 or 11, I think it was 11 people that day that worked for me back in the day and are still working in the industry. And I knew that they loved their people and took good care of them.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter that the building was 40 years old. 30 years old, I guess. It was a little outdated. But it was clean. The food was good. It was a great spot. And my dad is happy as a camper, and they have literally just done such a great job with him out there. I'm yeah. just absolutely so pleased.
That's amazing.
So Becky played that role. And so right now today, if any of my friends have a problem, I just call Becky and say, Becky, set this up. That's what I want it to be, that easy. Anybody in our company, 2,500 employees, I don't know what to do with mama.
Right.
Call your health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
ask for a senior solutions advisor.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So we need to pull out some of that campaign back in the day and probably use that again.
There you go. That's amazing. Scott, this is exciting, and enjoy your time in the mountains. And I pray you hit the ball 15 yards further in the mountains.
I hope I do too. I'm just not into the woods.
Exactly.
All right. Okay, great. Jamie, you have a great week, Scott. And thank you so much.
You too. Bye-bye.
Let's push the word. Yep. I know. Thanks.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
If there's one thing today's conversation makes clear, it's this. When we stop focusing on selling and start focusing on solving, everything changes. Healthcare doesn't need more marketing. It needs more meaning. And that starts with the people who show up, not with a pitch, but with a plan to help. Here's the takeaway. No matter your role, ask yourself, am I making it easier for people to find real solutions or just adding more noise? Because the best kind of disruption isn't loud, it's useful. This podcast is sponsored by Your Health and produced by Story Society Creative. Thanks so much for listening today. Go out, solve a problem for somebody, and I promise you, you will never work another day in your life. Thanks so much. Have a great day.